WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Brian Kobergers agreed to plead guilty in the murders of four University of Idaho students. Benjamin Mogan's daughter was among the victims.
That's going to be nothing nice to go through for the rest of your life. And he'll have to think about that every day, all the terrible things he allegedly did.
Lawmakers in the Senate up for the second night in a row for a marathon voting session on amendments to President Trump's so-called big, beautiful spending bill. Republicans, like Majority Leader John Thune, arguing in favor of the package.
This, Mr. President, will make this country safer, stronger, and more prosperous.
This bill is going to ruin people's lives.
Connecticut Democrat Chris Murphy arguing against. Thousands of city workers have gone on strike in Philadelphia. Trash collectors, street repair crews, police dispatchers, and others all demanding more higher pay than the city's proposed. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Wisconsin is closing in on a new bipartisan state budget. Sholly Pittman has more.
Governor Tony Evers announced a tentative deal early this morning. The agreement includes $330 million for childcare, including money directly to providers as the pandemic-era Child Care Counts program winds down. There's also $1.4 billion in new funding for K-12 schools. And despite a rumored cut, the Universities of Wisconsin or UW system would get $256 million under the deal, plus $840 million for campus building projects. The governor called it the largest boost to the state university system in nearly 20 years. The bill also includes $1.3 billion in income tax cuts, mostly for the middle class. About 1.6 million people would see an average cut of $180 per year. That's a popular idea. A recent Marquette poll found 65% of voters want at least half of the state's $4 billion surplus used for tax cuts. The legislature's budget committee meets at 9 a.m. today to take up the package. The full state legislature is expected to vote on the package tomorrow. After that, Evers has 10 business days to act on the plan.
A memorial for fallen Milwaukee police officer Kendall Corder continues to grow outside of the District 2 headquarters. That's where Corder served before being fatally shot on June 26th. Mourners have placed flowers, memorials, and blue line flags on a marked squad car. Officer Corder and his partner, both six-year veterans, were responding to a call about a person with a weapon when they were ambushed and shot multiple times. Corder died 3 days later from his injuries. His partner survived. And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Bucks making moves in free agency. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks have agreed to bring back three of their players, guards Gary Trent and Kevin Porter, and forward Taurean Prince, all three agreeing to two-year deals to stay in Milwaukee, with the second year being a player option. But the Bucks are losing their center, Brook Lopez. He'll sign a two-year contract with the LA Clippers. Lopez became a team leader during his 7 years with the Bucks.
Whatever happens, you know, whatever I do, just having a positive influence on the game. You know, that was my main thought. Having fun, but having a positive influence on the game, a positive impact.
Baseball, the Brewers taking on the Mets tonight in New York. The Crew coming off that 4-3 loss Sunday to the Rockies in 11 innings.
Extras are extras, but I mean, everyone in here was fired up to get a chance to walk it off, you know, so I don't think it's really hard necessarily to get back in the dugout and try to rally guys up because everyone's still chomping at the bit.
That's the Brewers right fielder Sal Frelick. With Sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This report is brought to you by Freedom Fireworks, with 20 locations throughout southeastern Wisconsin. FreedomFireworksWI.com.
It is going to be mostly sunny and pleasant today. We'll get to around 82 for a high this afternoon, with wind out of the northwest at 5 to 15. Clear tonight, 67. Tomorrow, sunny, 87. And then on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 84. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now it's 64.
The 4th of July is right around the corner, and Freedom Fireworks has everything your family needs for a safe and exciting holiday celebration. With 20 southeastern Wisconsin locations fully stocked up with everything from sparklers to artillery shells, thundersnaps to 500-gram aerials, Freedom Fireworks guarantees to bring smiles and cheers to every backyard celebration. For fireworks from all the top brands and specials that can't be beat, go to freedomfireworkswi.com for a location near you. Freedom Fireworks wishes you a safe and happy 4th of July.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Indy Duttagupta, he is with the Center for Law and Social Policy.
The Trump administration's agenda is reducing economic growth. The programs that they're proposing cutting, like Medicaid and SNAP, especially for kids, actually more than pay for themselves. So we are really looking at a tough long-term economic outlook entirely created by the current policymakers.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Maggie Dawn.
On the next show, what happens if 20 million people lose their health insurance? Kristen Krall from Fair Share America joins Maggie to talk about the Stop the Billionaire Giveaway bus tour.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to 540 WAUK, Waukesha's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Tuesday morning. We made it to July. July 1st, 2025. Parker Olson standing by in Madison Studio A2. Brittany Merlot is off today. Coming up this hour, we will talk to Lincoln County dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser. And it was not a great week last week for farmers, only, what, 2.5, 3.5 days of field work because of all the rain. But in other news related to food and farming, you know, there is still this trade war that President Trump has, you know, waged on other nations. These are far from done deals. We just haven't heard much about them lately. But apparently the Trump administration has just figured out that maybe these across-the-board tariffs aren't working, because the whole point was to bring things back to America, you know, bring certain crops back, bring manufacturing back, things like that. There are certain things you can't grow in this country that we get elsewhere. And so we'll talk about that brilliant revelation on the behalf of Trump's ag secretary. Coming up. Let's see. No Brittany here, but I'm sure we've got notes from Robin Tigerton. Sure enough, they're on YouTube. Good morning from Tigerton. Lots of sun and 63 degrees. Another busy day mowing lawns in the Tigerton area, getting plenty of sun too. I've got to go see the eye doctor July 16th in Wittenberg. He mows lawn and plows snow at the Tigerton post office. And in the winter, he always thinks of the postal workers, because we mentioned today is National Postal Workers Day. He said, yesterday I heard Debbie Harry's song "The Tide Is High" from 1980 on the radio, and you have to have Kristen Lyerly singing that song sometime. All right, we will do that. Debbie Harry turns 80 years old today. We were talking in the last hour about the newly announced budget deal for the state budget that Governor Evers and legislative Republicans reached yesterday. We went through some of the details. Cassandra writes on YouTube, this is better than I was expecting. I never thought they'd give money to childcare. And that's true. There will be some significant funding to childcare, not exactly what the governor wants. But we've reached out to Corrine Hendrickson from New Glarus, who's been a leading advocate for childcare support in the state budget. And she is going to join us in just over 10 minutes to give us her reaction to the child care portion of the budget, and also tell us what questions remain to be answered. I mean, there are still other details that have to be announced on this state budget plan, and we'll review those again in our next hour with Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area, who will join us at about 8:30 to talk about what's going on there. We'll talk a little bit more about the state budget deal in just a moment, but first I wanted to remind you that you can sign up for our daily newsletter over at upnorthnewswi.com. And, of course, you can follow us on our website as well. One of the website feature articles this week is about swimming in the summertime and some common Wisconsin lake hazards. After all, with temps that were pushing 90 recently and will be again this week, a trip to the lake might sound like the perfect time to cool off, but you'll find in our article some advice on protecting kids from drowning hazards, avoiding E. coli contaminated waters, lower the chance of parasites causing swimmer's itch, and how to spot that blue-green algae, which can be harmful to humans and especially to pets. Search for lake hazards on our website to find the article. And make sure to check out the link at the bottom of the article to one of our top weekend road trip stories, 7 great places to see waterfalls around Wisconsin. Parker, are you ever, in all your swimming and beach time, ever get swimmer's itch?
I am not much of a swimmer at all, Pat, actually. So,
okay.
No.
Okay.
Can't say I've had the itch.
I had it like 2 times as a kid, maybe at ages, 9 and 10 or something like that. And I don't even know what they do it for it these days, but back then, it was something called, was it calamine lotion? Something like that. And you had to pour some of that into a bath and you had to just lay in there for the longest time. And even then, it still didn't work. You were just itching and scratching like crazy. And I'm surprised, they keep yelling at you, don't itch. They should put like the cone of shame, on your hands.
Yeah.
To stop you from doing that. Anyway, so to avoid swimmer's itch, read that article and some tips about making sure that you are swimming safely. Also on our website, 10 Wisconsin homes that have been featured on HGTV. So take a look at that. So we went through some of the details of the state budget in our last hour, and I realized, hold on, back to the comment section here. Alicia, I got swimmer's itch from a hotel pool. I got one reaction to that, Alicia. Ew. Because to get swimmer's itch from a hotel pool tells me they didn't do a good job of cleaning that pool, and I'm just going to leave it at that. All right, back to the state budget deal. Again, the governor announced not just the increase in funding for the UW system and for child care, but I neglected to give details on what the governor says is a nearly $1.4 billion increase in spendable revenue for K-12 schools across the state. And that word spendable is very important because in the last budget and prior to that, Republicans had this great little budget trick that they would play. They would say, we are giving, I'll just grab a number here, $1 billion. Whoop, knocked my microphone. We're giving $1 billion to schools. Well, they weren't really. They were giving $1 billion that was supposed to go to schools, but schools have these state-imposed revenue limits. They can't exceed the limits. So the money comes into schools on paper and goes right back out to schools to property tax relief. And that's fine. Just call it property tax relief. But, don't say, oh, yeah, we gave all this money to schools when it was not spendable money for the schools. This does have a $1.4 billion increase in spendable revenue. It's an increase in what's called categorical aid. Oh, Pat, what's categorical aid? Okay, there's base state aid that everybody gets, and then there's categories of additional aid for things like special education, transportation, libraries, things like that, all vary from school district to school district. But those categorical aids are just another form of state support for our local schools. And the net increase in all those categorical aids, according to the governor, is 5 times larger than the increase in the last budget. And it is a 60% increase above what Republicans on the Budget Committee had previously approved. There is also this big increase in special education reimbursement. Local school districts will receive 42% reimbursement in the first year, 45% reimbursement in the second year of the budget for their special education costs. It is the highest reimbursement rate in 30 years. And a larger increase for special education than the last 3 state budgets combined. There's also $2 million in operations for the Department of Public Instruction after Republican lawmakers had previously voted to cut 10% of the agency's operating costs through the state budget process. So there's a lot there for K-12. There's a lot more for the UW system. And again, bear in mind, Republicans wanted to cut funding for the UW system, even with a $4 billion surplus, because they wanted to punish universities for being woke. And remember, what's our definition of woke on this morning program? Woke means, you know, don't be a bigot. Don't be a racist. Don't be a misogynist. Don't be a jerk. That's the definition of woke. I don't know why people seem to be against that, but that's all it is, folks, bottom line. Anyway, there will be an increase to the UW system, an increase of $256 million over the next 2 years. That includes over $100 million to help stabilize the system after recent campus closures and layoffs and program cuts and consolidations, in order to ensure that UW campuses remain hubs for the workforce and for the local economies all across the state. There will be $54 million to retain and recruit faculty and staff in high-demand fields to make sure that the UW stays competitive and a world-class institution. There will be $94 million to increase wages for UW system workers, including faculty and staff. Recall how in the last budget cycle, Republicans held pay raises hostage until diversity, equity, and inclusion positions could be eliminated or repurposed, I guess you'd say. There's $7 million there to provide 24/7 virtual telehealth mental health services to nearly all students across UW system campuses. So that's $7 million for mental health care for UW, and I believe it was $30 million for mental health initiatives at K-12, is again a recognition that mental health care for our kids overall, you know, including as they're going to college, is in dire need. For whatever reason you want to lay out there, our students and our children are in need of services that they're currently not getting in the classroom or getting at home. And so it's nice to see that that is being recognized and supported. And then there's all kinds of capital projects in here for the UW system. A lot of this is normally handled by the State Building Commission. But I think Republicans and the governor said, well, as long as we're at the negotiating table, let's bang some of these things out. And that would include replacing an addition at Polk Learning Commons at UW-Oshkosh, finished construction of the Prairie Springs Science Center at UW-La Crosse, and demolish Crawley Hall, which lacks fire suppression. There will be money to renovate the Health Sciences and Northwest Quadrant Complex at UW-Milwaukee to transform former hospital buildings into a health sciences hub. They will renovate and put a new addition on DeJope Residence Hall at UW-Madison. There will be a renovation and building an addition to Century Hall at UW-Stevens Point. Renovations at UW-Milwaukee's Sandberg Hall East Tower. A new addition at the UW-Stout Recreation Complex. A dining hall renovation at UW-Madison, a demolition and relocation of a humanities building at UW-Madison, and also money for UW-Madison's Science Hall, which was originally built in 1887 and will undergo a renovation to restore the building's historic character, it says, while improving accessibility, addressing maintenance issues, and adding an atrium. These are investments in our education. These are the things that are going to keep people here, keep our best and brightest here. Far too many people decide to go to college somewhere else, and then they settle down somewhere else, and we lose them. If we don't make investments like that, we continue to lose them. The amount of people inflow coming in, people like me, who came from Minnesota, went to UW-Eau Claire, married a cute farmer's daughter from Manitowoc, and settled here, that number's a lot lower. We need to be improving that number, but you're not going to do it if you're punishing education and higher education in the state. So, again, you have to tip your cap to Governor Tony Evers for dragging some Republicans kicking and screaming toward the realization that we're paying these tax dollars, Let's make the investments that are going to grow the economy. And you do that by attracting our young people, attracting our best and brightest, attracting people from other states, and not continually trying to drive them away. All right, we've got two guests to squeeze in our next segment. There, some of you will get a local update. Others are going to visit quickly with Dan Hagen from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander and Corrine Hendrickson to talk about child care counts and support for it in the next state budget. Live from Lake Wissota, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
President John F. Kennedy said, "Let every nation know whether it wishes us well or ill. We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and success of liberty." This Independence Day salute made possible by Thunder Bay Grill, a proud supporter of our United States military, serving top quality steaks, Cajun specialties, and seafood, perfect for gathering, relaxing, and socializing. Thunder Bay Grill, located at I-94 and Highway 164, Milwaukee.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, "I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah." It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m.
Being blind doesn't look how others may think.
Retinitis pigmentosa aimed to overwhelm my family.
It tried to cut me down.
I know where to find support.
Learn more at fightingblindness.org. A public service message from the Foundation Fighting Blindness.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. I'm Greg Bach. Welcome to Tuesday, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. Well, it's summertime, and not everything requires us to go outside. Some people don't like swimming. Some people don't like tanning. Some people don't like barbecuing. I don't understand the last one, but whatever, to each their own. Something we can always count on this time of year are the over-the-top, big-budget movies, and there is no shortage of those. Whether you like action movies, or comic book movies, or horror movies, or comic book movies, or more comic book movies, the summer is the perfect time for over-the-top blockbusters. And Don Rosen sat down with Brett Hoffman from Marcus Theaters to talk about some of the flicks that are coming out over the next few months. So take a listen and enjoy and get your tickets, because I'm sure some of these will sell out, like that comic book movie everyone's talking about. You know that one, right?
It's movie time. It's 7:38 at WRJN, and Brett Hoffman is here. We're going to talk movies this morning, and we have two big movies opening up this weekend, and let's talk about those. First, we got a horror film and a racing film. What do you have for us, Brett?
That's right. The first one is a PG-13 horror. It is Megan 2.0. This is the sequel to 2022's Megan that caught the world by storm. On a small budget, this thing was released and earned over $150 million. And because of that, of course, we're getting a sequel. Well, if you like the first one, you'll probably like this one. 2 years after Megan's initial rampage, her creator, whose name is Gemma, has to resort to bringing back her infamous creation to take down a new threat, Amelia, which is a military-grade weapon that was built by a defense contractor and had stolen Megan's underlying tech. Expect a lot of jokes and a lot of other bizarre things going on in this one. But again, Megan took the world by storm in 2022. If you liked it then, you'll like Megan 2.0.
Yeah, and I heard it was a $12 million budget for the film, and they made $150 million. That's a profit margin. Now, I've seen the picture, the poster for Megan. Is it a real person who plays Megan, or is it a figure? What is it?
Megan is a real person. So there is a real person that does play Megan.
Okay.
And then, of course, there are the special effects shots as well.
Yeah, okay. All right, next one's a big racing movie with Brad Pitt. Let's talk about it.
All right, F1. This one has been talked about for quite some time, especially globally. It's a PG-13 action movie, and this has got a great pedigree. It's directed by Joseph Kosinski, who was the guy who directed Top Gun Maverick, and among other films. It also stars Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt, he starts as a Formula One driver who's come out of retirement to mentor and team up with a younger driver. I'll tell you, this movie was made for the big screen. The footage is absolutely amazing. It was filmed on real tracks in partnership with Formula One. And let me tell you, not only does the footage look spectacular, but Brad Pitt does too. It's hard to believe this guy is 61 years old, but much like Tom Cruise, it seems like both of those guys are ageless and both have popular movies coming out this summer. So F1, beautiful on the big screen. See it on the biggest screen possible. And it's also playing, if you want to head down to the Gurney Cinema in Gurney, Illinois, it's also playing on their 40X theater. So if you really want to feel the rumble of those cars and all the kinds of twists and turns and emotion seat, you can go check that out at the Gurney Mills Cinema as well.
Do they pipe in exhaust? You know, like you can smell the car's exhaust. Do they have that smell going through the smoke and everything?
No exhaust, but you know, what's really neat is not only do the seats move and kind of rumble, but you have wind machines and other types of effects.
Oh, really?
You really feel like you're right in the cockpit with Brad Pitt as he's driving this thing.
All right, so they got a forecast on how these two movies will do this weekend. Who do you think is going to beat who?
Well, I can tell you. Here's the forecast. So F1 is forecasted, and this is from Box Office Pro. F1 is forecast to be the number one movie domestically with between $45 and $55 million. Megan 2.0 is going to make somewhere in the 20 to 25 million range. And then How to Train Your Dragon, which has been on the top of the box office, is supposed to come in at about $20 million as well. So F1 will do great domestically. Worldwide, of course, where there's more F1 fans all over the world, it's supposed to do spectacular worldwide as well. So this is a big release. But don't forget, actually, midweek, before we talk to everyone, next week, Jurassic World Rebirth will come out on Wednesday. So before we talk next, you'll also have Jurassic World in the mix. And that is a thriller that's also great. Scarlett Johansson stars in that one with Jonathan Bailey. This is 5 years after the last film, and it deals with a group of scientists that have to go to this isolated region, this isolated island, to extract DNA from some of the prehistoric creatures that were left behind. This past Monday, we ran a mystery movie. We do that quite often. We've spoken about it. Our mystery movies are only $6, and go figure. Fans are treated to a spectacular mystery movie. The fans that came for a mystery movie this past Monday saw Jurassic World Rebirth, and let me tell you, people really enjoyed this one. It's a thriller where you never know what's coming around the corner next, I'll tell you that much.
Well, you call them mystery movies. Back in the 60s, they used to call them sneak previews, and they wouldn't tell you what film it was. They drop a hint by saying it's a major motion picture starring one of your favorite stars, which didn't really tell you much. And then you went to the theater, you saw the regular movie, and then you saw the sneak preview. And I remember once the sneak preview was Funny Girl with Barbara Streisand. Could you imagine going, not knowing what you're going to see, and then all of a sudden, boom, Streisand's in Funny Girl, because they don't want to tell you in advance. They want to get your, and then they have you fill out cards and stuff, you know, yeah, what you think of the movie. How many Jurassic Parks have there been already?
Oh, I should know this, but I'd have to count. Have been several, obviously. There was 1, 2, and 3 in the original series, and then there were a few more in the Jurassic World series, and now we're on to the next Jurassic World one. But they did a nice job with this one. I'll tell you, you're going to enjoy it. There's a lot of action in it, a lot of surprises. And Scarlett and Jonathan Bailey are well, Scarlett's not up and coming, but Jonathan Bailey, surely after he starred in Wicked last year, has been on the rise as well.
Thanks to Brett Hoffman from Marcus Theaters and Don Rosen for having a great talk. You can listen to that entire conversation by going to civicmedia.us/shows. You can also download episodes as a podcast. Go to your podcast distribution center of choice, find your favorite show here on Civic Media, and subscribe to it. That way it gets delivered directly to your device, and you can listen to it anytime a new episode is available. So once again, go to civicmedia.us to find out more. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll be back in 20 minutes. It is 7:29.
Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Consumers' concerns over food ingredients, things like red dye, driving another market here in Wisconsin. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news for a Tuesday. The Food Finance Institute's taking a closer look at what can be done within our borders to supply food businesses with natural products that provide the same flavors and the same colors. It's the job of Jamie Valenti Jordan, the food brand program manager with the Food Finance Institute.
Naturally Wisconsin is part of a larger organization called Naturally Network. Naturally Network is a kind of an expression of this need to partner together in order to support the natural products industry, most commonly in the food industry, honestly. And so what Naturally Wisconsin is intended to be is an opportunity for us to bring all of the resources that are here to support both our farmers and our entire supply chain through the natural products ecosystem to help us to be better partners, better business partners.
Jamie Valenti Jordan is the executive director of Naturally Wisconsin. He said ultimately their goal is to make Wisconsin the best place to launch and scale business in the natural sector. You can find out more about their efforts at naturallywisconsin.org.
On a dairy, decisions are never made in a vacuum. Your products, technologies, protocols, they're all connected. Or at least they should be. Introducing Empower Dairy from Merck Animal Health, the only full solution portfolio in the dairy industry. Empower is more than just powerful identification, monitoring, and biopharma tools. It's about how they work together to eliminate guesswork and solve specific problems. Learn how at m-power-dairy.com.
When hot weather strikes your cattle, milk production drops and feed intakes decrease. Summer heat also impacts the quality of your herd's reproduction. Protect your cows and grow your bottom line. Add BioVet's Bovine Goldlight to your cow's daily ration. Bovine Goldlight keeps the herd hydrated, maintains milk production, and keeps your breeding program in check. Learn more about Bovine Goldlight at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
And speaking of local food, Wisconsin Farmers Union expressing their displeasure that the Joint Finance Committee has removed funding for the Wisconsin Local Food Purchase Assistance Program. This program is something that's currently being funded by federal dollars that will be exhausted by the end of August. According to Wisconsin Farmers Union, they say that that program is a win-win for farmers, food access organizations, and communities. More at MidwestFarmReport.com on that story and others. I'm Pam Yonke.
As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny and pleasant today. We'll get to around 82 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the northwest at 5 to 15. Clear tonight, 67. Tomorrow, sunny, 87. And then on Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 84. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 64.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings. But there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. go-to for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the interview system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station. And on the app. Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, breaking down more decisions from Wisconsin Supreme Court with Pat Kreitlow from Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll have State Representative Angela Stroud on Republicans supporting lead water line removal in Superior if they can stick taxpayers with the bill instead of a private utility. We'll also have our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. You're going to love this one. I think Hans should come back for this one. Solar panels in farm fields. Oh, you heard us talk about this with John and Gordy yesterday. Solar panels in farm fields on electric powered tractors so that the cows can stay under the shade of the panel as it slowly rotates through the field where they're grazing. That's in Climate Check tomorrow with Melissa Baldoff. We will also have our weekly visits with our civic media friends Earl Ingram in Southeast Wisconsin, James Kelly in Northwest Wisconsin, Jimmy Cuska in Southwest Wisconsin, and of course Parker and I will have Melissa Kay in Wisconsin Rapids with the latest on her
Pigeon Quest.
I just wanted to see if Parker was standing by with the Pigeon Quest button, and he was.
I've always got Pigeon Quest ready.
That's so good. Dan Hagen joins us from Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander. Hans Breitenmoser, Lincoln County dairy farmer from the Merrill area. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing great.
All right.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Dan.
Hans, how about you? I know the official crop report said there was 3.5 days of field work available last week because of the rain. Obviously, a lot less in some parts. How are things up by you?
Well, pretty wet. Now, we've had a couple of dry days here, and we're actually going to start chopping our second crop this morning here in the next few hours. So
yeah, the second crop got chopped here in the field across the street from me yesterday. And I've already marveled previously at, you know, just how big and how fast, you know, this equipment is getting. I swear that thing was moving at least 30, maybe 35 miles an hour down the field. And I, you know, you think of baling hay and you think of just very slowly working your way down, chopping and not this stuff. Boy, we got like something out of Transformers working the fields out here. And Dan, you're following stories up in Rhinelander, not the least of which are some in Hans's Lincoln County. And, you know, there's a nursing home there we've talked about that may or may not be for sale. But then in Taylor County, not too far away, there's also some kind of drilling project going on over there. What's the latest out of Taylor County?
Yeah, that's right. So Greenlight Metals is this Canadian company, and they are on the Toronto Stock Exchange. They have a subsidiary based in Wisconsin, and they have started drilling in Taylor County at what's called the Bend Deposit. That's near Medford. And there is a lot of gold and copper at that deposit. The issue that is, however, it's using like non-ferrous metallic mining. And more or less, this releases a ton of sulfuric acid. So there's a reason why there is a moratorium on this kind of mining for a long time. That moratorium has been lifted. So this kind of exploratory drilling is the first step toward opening a mine.
Potentially so. And it was a mining moratorium that Tom Tiffany was very instrumental in lifting and exposing this area to all of those harms from, you know, that exact kind of drilling. And not just creating a mine, but I mean, just the experimental drilling itself has potential to cause harm to the groundwater. So it's why people are concerned even about the test drilling that's going on right there. And Dan, of course, is following that out of Rhinelander. Hans, I know you're following things with the Pinecrest Nursing Home sale. We were talking about the county board maybe putting it up for sale. This is not yet a done deal?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it ain't over till it's over. The county board here in Lincoln County sold the nursing home once before, and then that deal fell through after the fact. The county board voted again in favor to sell here to a different company more recently, and that vote went through as a simple majority vote. Now, some people are saying that there should have been a two-thirds vote to make that happen, since it happened outside the regular budget process. But the people in Lincoln County are just concerned about losing our nursing home and losing control of our nursing home. When we ran it ourselves, or when we partnered with North Central Healthcare to run the operations there, we at least had some control over it. And my argument against selling it, one of them, is that, you know, once it's sold, we simply lose all control. And the company that has purchased it now, you know, they've got about 340 of these facilities all over the United States. And my argument was, look, you know, even if the people who own this company now are, you know, super and you know, they're going to treat residents well and treat employees well and so forth and so on, I said, this is big business. And, it, you know, there's no guarantees. I mean, we could see a different ownership, you know, have the thing bought out by a different company in a couple years from now, and have the wheels really fall off. So it's confusing to me as to why the county board is choosing to try and sell a nursing home that's a 5-star facility that's been doing great financially the last couple of years. It's taking care of our residents and keeping the promise that we've you know, had, the deal that we've had for 70 years in Lincoln County, is if you work hard and you do the right thing, we'll have a place for you when you get old.
So I can see why Dan and everybody at Newswatch 12 is following a story like this, Dan. It's got real human impact. Again, that whole notion of, you know, the benevolent corporation that will always be benevolent, or will it be? I'm sure, Dan, you get reaction every time you do a story about this issue.
Yeah, no, certainly. And I just want to ask you one thing, Hans. You know, you said it's doing well financially, but, you know, we keep hearing that it's losing the county $1 million+ every year. So what do you mean by it's doing good financially?
Well, it's been self-sustaining for the last, year and a half, 2 years. When I was on the county board years ago, it was, you know, there was tax levy dollars that needed to keep it afloat. There's no doubt about that. And we partnered with North Central to help, you know, improve efficiencies and so forth. North Central Healthcare is a consortium Lincoln County works with already. And so it seemed like a good fit. And you know, things turned around. It took a little while, but things turned around. But what I find interesting too, Dan, is that, you know, when through a survey that was done in Lincoln County, when people were asked, would you be willing to help support the nursing home if need be? The resounding answer was yes. So people in Lincoln County are looking at their nursing home and saying, yeah, even if it costs us a couple bucks, we're willing to keep this thing afloat because we see it as important. And we understand that, you know, if we no longer have control over it, we might not have a nursing home at all. And what does that mean for us in, you know, in terms of, you know, when you're elderly parents or what have you have to go to a nursing home, do you want to place them 2 hours from your house? You know, what does that look like? We've got an ideal situation here, but what we also have, I think, is the majority of county board supervisors who came into their role as county board supervisors with sort of this hell-bent philosophical notion that if you know, government shouldn't be involved in anything. And they've been unwilling to look past that and look at the facts here on the ground with our particular situation and see that we've got something special here that we should be hanging on to. And in doing so, you know, we create the economy that goes along with it. You know, we can, you know, there's 200 people roughly that work at Pinecrest Nursing Home. If Mega Corporation Incorporated decides that you know, these dots on their little balance sheets and spreadsheets aren't working out very well from their perch on Wall Street, and they say, yeah, it's time to pull the pin and Merrill, 200 people lose their jobs, and we don't have anything to say about it. To me, it's just poor management.
And Pat, you can cut me off if you'd like, but I think the argument from the other side, I heard from Ken Wickham, a county board chair, is, you know, this has been an issue for a long time. A lot of these county board members were up for re-election. They got re-elected, even though their stance on Pinecrest was clear. So what would you make of that argument that they were elected, they can make decisions for the people?
Well, I mean, I agree with that to a point. And I'm not, you know, having been on the county board for 10 years, I don't think that, the board should rush to referendum for every 98 cent detail. Yes, you have to put your big boy pants on and make some decisions for your constituents. But one of the things with Pinecrest is it's such a big deal. It's such a big deal in our community. And so many people ask so often, just put it to a referendum, you know, so we can get the input from, from the people that are impacted from it. And the board refused to take it to a referendum. I think if they would have gone to a referendum, they would have found out that, people want this thing and they're willing to support it. And they want to keep it alive. So I agree with what Ken said. Yes, there was an election. But there's also plenty of evidence to suggest that this is something that people wanted more input on.
You often hear that when it appears that the elected officials, are acting more on their own ideological behalf than on, the will of the majority of their constituents. But again, they're the ones that have to make the decision whether to have that referendum or not. So obviously Dan's got a lot to follow, and I'm glad you were here to ask some questions of Hans about that. Dan, here's a question or a comment for you on the text line from Jim in Brookfield. Hey, Dan, sounds like a true case of Berkey fever to be roller skiing in July. Good luck reaching the magic number of 20 Berkeys for the purple bib. Again, from Jim in Northfield, because Dan mentioned he's going to go roller skiing after this segment.
Well, I appreciate that, Jim. I will tell you, my father is a birch legger, as it's called. That means 20 Berkeys. He's done about 27. I will be on my 11th or 12th. And, you gotta keep staying active. I just was notified I got dropped a wave. I've been in wave two for a year, but my time was too slow, so I got bumped down to wave three. The goal is to get back up, so putting in the work now.
That's why you lift those weights now, got to be ready for it.
That's right.
Dan Hagen, you can follow what he's doing over at Newswatch 12 in Rhinelander. The man's got to get his roller skis on. Thanks for sticking around a little bit longer, Dan. We appreciate it.
Of course. Good to see you, Pat. Good to see you, Hans.
All right. Take care now.
Thank you, Dan.
Hans, I wanted to take a moment with you to talk about the president's trade war, which is still ongoing, even though we don't talk about it quite so much. But specifically this, from the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins, has told the Wall Street Journal the Trump administration may consider granting tariff exemptions for goods that are difficult to produce domestically in the United States, like cocoa beans or coffee. Currently, these products are subject to comprehensive tariffs, which have led Democrats to criticize Republicans for driving up consumer costs. In an interview, Rollins says, "Everything is still under discussion at this stage. I believe that for certain products we cannot produce domestically, it's important to fully understand the situation and develop a comprehensive strategy that supports all of these goals." Do you feel congratulations are in place and in order for the Trump White House for discovering the 1920s era song, "Yes, We Have No Bananas"? That we cannot grow bananas or cocoa beans or coffee here in the U.S., so why put on a tariff designed to bring products back here when they were never here in the first place? I think it's great that it only took them 5.5 months to figure this out.
Yeah. So, I mean, that just gives me an abundance of hope, Pat, because if 5.5 months is all that took, then I can hardly wait to see what the next 5.5 months will bring.
Again, it was supposed to be 90 deals in 90 days with 90 nations out there.
I think what we've seen is 90 changes of minds and 90 flips and flops and 5 months of chaos, leaving our trade partners confused, leaving our farmers confused, leaving the Farm Service Agency confused, leaving the markets confused.
Yep. And again, like we had one farmer from Chippewa County saying, is it America first or America alone? And it's tough to tell sometimes. Hans Breitenmoser, thank you for your time as well. Get out in that field. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much, Ben.
All right. We'll continue things on here with a local update for some of you. Others will be back here. And then in our next hour, Dan Schaefer and Chad Holmes all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Distinguished television journalist Bill Moyers died June 26th at age 91. In his long career, he earned 30 Emmy Awards, served as President Lyndon Johnson's press secretary, and was a stalwart voice for democracy and democracy reform. On Being a Reporter, Moyers told a Chautauqua Institution audience in 2016, "I was hooked, and in one way or another, I've continued to engage the issues of money and power, equality and democracy over a lifetime spent at the intersection between politics and journalism." From 1964 to 1967, he served as Johnson's press secretary during the passage of the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act. He was instrumental in the creation of public broadcasting, where he later reported for almost a decade. He wrote scores of commentaries for CBS and NBC and produced 70 documentaries for PBS. Democracy and democracy reform appears frequently in Moyers' work, including his Moyers on Democracy podcast and a companion book of speeches. When Moyers retired in 2017, he wrote, "Please remain vigilant and engaged as citizens in the civic and political life of your community and our country. Democracy is fragile, and no one can say with certainty that it can withstand the manifold risks to which it is now exposed." We've linked to his farewell essay and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. "Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other."
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Mommy, can I sit in the front seat just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. I'm Greg Bach, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. When it comes to a show like Matt and Air on Air, there's something that Jane and I always say. We are not lawyers. We are lawyer adjacent because we have amazing legal minds here at Civic Media. And one of them is Maggie Dawn. You may know her as the host of The Maggie Dawn Show, which is on Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. right here on Civic Media. Another thing that Jane and I cover on the show is this double standard that always seems to happen between the Republicans and the Democrats. And today we're going to listen to Maggie talk about that same double standard being applied to our Wisconsin Supreme Court justices.
Some breaking local news this afternoon, which I found to be just fascinating, and I wanted to start there. Do you remember this whole hubbub not too long ago about Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Dalich? She was scheduled to speak at an NAACP fundraiser last year. And there was some conservative backlash about that, and she ended up canceling her appearance. Well, as I like to say, Republicans seem to have a set of rules for me, meaning Republicans, and then a separate set of rules for thee, meaning Democrats. And that is playing out in the last 24 hours. This is reporting from Dan Bice of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It states in the Wisconsin Judicial Code of Conduct that a judge may not, quote, personally participate in the solicitation of funds or other fundraising activities, end quote, for charitable, political, whatever, anything that you want. Basically, if it's fundraising, you can't do that for other organizations because it looks like your independence is being put into question. But yesterday, Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice and hyper-partisan Rebecca Bradley was the featured speaker, not at like generical advocacy organization that someone can say has a liberal or conservative bend, you know, like the NAACP. No. She was the keynote speaker at the Republican National Lawyers Association in Madison. Wow. Now here's where it gets really interesting. Her name and face, big smiling picture, was used on the Republican National Lawyers Association webpage advertising the event that included some huge buttons that said, donate now, join us, and advertised various, you know, sponsorships where you pay money to buy tables or have your company's logo affiliated with the event. Sure seems to me like that might run afoul of the old judicial conduct's code that says judges may not, quote, personally participate in the solicitation of funds or other fundraising activities. Now, you didn't have to pay to go to this event, but it wasn't just open to the public either. You had to RSVP. But the point was, they were selling sponsorships. I don't know. Does that seem like a solicitation of funds? It sure does to me. So how is this not a violation of the Judicial Code of Conduct? I just don't understand it. It defies the meaning of words as we generally understand them here in Wisconsin. Again, the website included a donate now button hyperlink next to her picture, and there were sponsorship packages that you could purchase from $500 to $2,500. So I just don't get it. I just do not get it. Now, according to Mark Belling, Rebecca Bradley is not likely to run for another 10-year term. She hasn't confirmed that, but I found this very fascinating. Here's the other little wrinkle here. It turns out that there is a linkage, if you will, that is very odd, very, very odd. And here it is. Once this became a point of investigation by Dan Bice, they actually took down the sponsorship section for the event. So they get called on it. Hey, you're not supposed to be doing this. Oh, we'll just never mind those pesky sponsorships and our solicitation of funds. And they took down those things from their website, which again, might sort of indicate that you probably shouldn't have been doing any of this. I think it's all just very, very strange. Now, the committee, this is the Judicial Conduct Advisory Committee, in 1988, in other words, these are the folks that make sure judges are following the code of conduct, was asked back in, again, 1988, if a judge could even participate as a celebrity judge in a fundraising event for a charitable organization. And the answer was no. So if you can't even be a judge, I don't get how Justice Bradley gets to talk at the Republican National Lawyers Association meeting in Madison yesterday and not violate the code of conduct. I mean, this is pretty gross. She, and again, there's no question about Rebecca Bradley's political leanings. She was appointed to three different judicial jobs by former Republican Governor Scott Walker. In her 2016 campaign, the Republican Party of Wisconsin was her biggest donor. She attended the Republican presidential debate in Milwaukee. And she also went to after parties hosted by Grover Norquist's Americans for Tax Reform and Americans for Prosperity.
I would really, really suggest you listen to the entirety of that segment, which you can find at civicmedia.us/shows. Look for the Maggie Dawn Show and look for the episode entitled Judicial Double Standards and the Big Brutal Bill. You've been listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, head over to our website, waukradio.com, and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. Families of four murdered Idaho college students say accused killer Brian Koberger is ready to plead guilty. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti.
In a letter sent to those victims' families, Koberger accepted a plea deal that would keep him in prison for the rest of his life without the possibility of an appeal or parole.
Officials in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, say Wes Rowley had been living in his car when he set a brush fire to lure firefighters to Canfield Mountain, where he shot and killed two battalion chiefs, his former roommate, T.J. Franks.
I can't believe what he did. I mean, that is an absolutely disgusting thing to do.
Senators held an all-night voterama on amendments to President Trump's massive budget bill, and they're still at it. Republican Lindsey Graham.
Stick with the bill we wrote. You're going to be happy to reduce the deficit and make sure people's taxes don't go up.
Elon Musk is vowing to fund primary challenges to GOP lawmakers who do vote to pass it. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.